Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We were still beating, I think, the first six or seven games. We might have won five games or something, but kind of like scraping wins. But we were still winning. And because we were winning, there was still a bit of a bad atmosphere.
Edo, welcome to another edition of the No Chof Dares podcast on the OLB. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got my co-host here, Radio Roy, is what I'm going to call him from now on, since he's decided to fuck off to Sport 24 in Cyprus. And, you know, yeah, how's your radio debut, my friend, without me? Huh? They invited you on, don't invite me. The Charlie, yeah? Is that how it works?
Bro, you know, I gave you mad respect and I gave you a shout out, man.
It's okay.
It was nice, man. It was nice. It was relaxed. It was nice for the podcast, you know, because the more people acknowledge us, they give us the opportunity to speak on the radio where thousands of people can listen to what we're doing. So, like I always say, we're a team. So it doesn't matter if it's me or you, man. It's like, you know, what a center for says, it doesn't matter if I score a goal. It matters that the team wins.
You're making us sound like Siamese twins, mate. Not that close. Jesus. Right, well, we have a very, very special guest. And as you can probably see from the image below, I believe he's below, so if I'm going doing the recording, yeah, one of the funniest guys on the planet. Killian Sheridan, welcome to the show, geez. How you doing?
How you doing, yeah? Appreciate that intro. It's got a lot to live up to now.
Oh, come on, man. Come on. Those tweets that you've been putting out for the past few years. I mean, Jesus. Like,
tweets are different. Tweets are writing it down. You can think about it.
Hold on a second. You roped in a journalist into believing one of your tweets, and then you did some investigative work on him, and then you rumbled him. Come on now.
Yeah. That was a good one.
What was it? It was the Van Dijk one, wasn't it? About his boots. Is that the one? The laces?
It was the Liverpool one. I know that.
Right, okay. Because I remember you put one about being on the same flight as Raheem Sterling, watching Guardiola giving him pep talk, so to speak. Man, the amount of people that you've roped into is fantastic. It's fantastic. But the thing is, they love it as well, man. And yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Excellent. Likewise, mate. Well, Roy, do you want to start off the questions, my friend?
Well, actually, I was hoping that you was going to do the talking at the beginning, but yeah, I mean...
Just pass it over to me. Yeah? Just make it... Well, I'll ask the first question then. So I know you spent quite a bit of time moving different clubs. You're at Kilmarnock. You're in Bulgaria. You played for Celtic. And I'm not going to ask you the questions that you've been asked before about your time at Celtic, because you've done that to death, so to speak. But you came to Cyprus, and back then it wasn't as technically, advanced as what it is now. Okay, I wouldn't say it's technically advanced, but you kind of joined right around about the time there was a bit of a renaissance in Cyprus. I know Abwell were dominating. You won three titles there, if I'm not mistaken.
He was there for 2 years. He won two doubles.
Two doubles, yeah, and he had a goal. He scored a goal against IL again. Was it Anorthosis ground?
And kind of like a bit of a phantom match now, because technically, I don't think it counted.
Yeah, because it was 1-0, and then they went to a panel because the game was suspended. For people that are in the UK or that don't understand what happened, I know what happened. Roy knows what happened, but why was the game replayed? Why did it have to be cancelled and then replayed?
Crowd trouble. I'll leave it at that. There was some crowd trouble and game was postponed. Game was cancelled. Deciding game of the league, first versus second, we had to win. They just had to not lose. And it must have been 60 minutes. Something happened and the game got cancelled. So replayed while everything was up in the air. They decided, right, let's replay it. And then, yeah, I scored the one, we won 1-0 and I scored the goal. And then a week later, it goes to they decide, okay, we're awarding a 3-0 victory, I think it would have been.
So do you speak with Kaká? Is he fine? Is he fine after his injury?
I haven't spoken to him for a while, but
a bit of an exaggeration that day.
Hmm?
A bit of an exaggeration that day, you think, or?
I've never heard anyone say that at the club at the time. No one really felt that. I'm sure, obviously, it's what people will say, but I never really had that feeling or got that feeling either. After, people were saying it was a tactic or such and such, but I mean, there was still. If it's the last minute and it happens and someone says it, then okay. But I mean, there was still 30 minutes left. Yeah. I'm guessing, by the way, if it was around 60 minutes, I don't know when it was, but.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
there was still a good chunk of the game left.
Okay.
Well, that's the.
And I would have scored then anyway. I would have scored then anyway. If I didn't score then, I would have scored the next game.
Oh, mate. Well, look, I know Paulo Sergio signed you and you did pretty well against Hearts. Do you think that's one of the reasons why he came in for you?
It certainly would have helped. I'm sure it might have caught his eye and then he's maybe looked at me playing and fancied me. When I first went over there, I think I went, because of my time in Bulgaria, because of my time in Bulgaria, I was like 21. I was over there on my own, just not living right, like not doing the right things. And I was kind of so focused on not making the same mistake that I kind of wasn't really like putting myself out there or doing much. And I think at the beginning, I probably struggled a bit in that way. I probably wasn't really being myself. And I think that kind of held me back a little bit at the start. One of the things when I went there first, I would have liked to have started off a bit better.
So coming from Scotland, obviously, as you said yourself, you're in Bulgaria. I guess Bulgaria and Cyprus, you've got a similar kind of culture. I'm not going to ask you how easy it was for you to settle, because I guess English is a second language in Cyprus. But you coming from a massive club like Celtic to Abuel, who, let's be fair, they are one of the biggest clubs on the island. In terms of the expectancy from the supporters, did you feel that this was a club that had to win titles every single season?
Not when I first went. Like when I first went there, I didn't realise the pressures or like how big the club was in Cyprus, first of all. I'd probably add that into a factor in having a slow start there. And then the other part of it is, like you were saying about, I was at Celtic, so you've got like the being at a big club in a country or a country's biggest club. It's like when I was at Celtic, I was a youth player. I was never really one of the first team players that's going to be recognized all the time, every time I'm out on the street. Whereas in Cyprus, it was different. Everyone would recognize me, and that probably took a little bit of getting used to, because it was probably the first time really I'd had that.
Oh, that's fair enough. I mean, the reason I ask is because, you know, you mentioned just then that you weren't like a first team at Celtic, but you kind of knew the ethos of the club and what the expectancy was. I guess that from a youngster, you guys would have been told, right, these are the standards that need to be met. So this is what's to be expected. Granted, you know, it's still, you had Rangers, you had other clubs in there like Hearts, I guess, and Hibernian, Aberdeen as well, who rich history with Alex Ferguson back in the day. But at the same time, you know, that pressure from coming from Scotland to Abuel, a club, as I said, expected to win titles, expected to challenge week in, week out, with constant managerial changes, with players on big wages. I mean, even John Arnorisa came to Cyprus as well. So it must have been a little bit, I wouldn't say nervy for you, but were you a little bit, wow, like what the fuck's going on kind of thing?
It took me back a bit. Like I've said this a few times, that I've underestimated the football in Cyprus. Like I think a lot of people in the UK would do. Like how did view football in Cyprus? And that probably surprised me a bit at the start. And then kind of like the relationship clubs have with fans in Cyprus is totally different to what it's like in the UK. And not only Cyprus, it's more the UK to the rest of Europe, like kind of Eastern kind of Europe.
Yep.
And it's totally different. So you've, the first time something happens, like if the fans come to training and let you know things aren't acceptable, you're kind of like, whoa, what's this? And then it happens again. And then you realize, okay, this is how it is. This is the expectations. If you're not winning, if you're not playing well, then you're going to know about it.
But did you get that by all though? Because they were winning titles, as Roy said, you know, you won two consecutive titles, two doubles. Well, did that sort of thing happen there?
Yeah. Cause we did a bad start. That first season we won the league, we were, I think, 12 points behind. IL, I think, were pretty much first, maybe the whole season. And obviously that's why Paulo Sergio got sacked, because we were lost a lot of games, and obviously maybe not lost all the games, but we weren't winning the games we should have been winning. And we got knocked out of Europe and then got picked out of a hat to go into the Europa League. So at the start, I found out pretty quickly, like, it's what their expectations were.
Right, so they kind of gave you one more chance, right? And, you know, you stepped up. You did remarkably well your first two seasons. Played in the Champions League against Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, Ajax, if I'm not mistaken. But you told Messi to fuck off, didn't you?
I know, that headline kills me, because people are... I was trying to explain how before the game you see them in the tunnel and you're like, okay, that's Messi. That's the time when you're kind of like in, not starstruck or in awe, but you realize who you're playing against. But then as soon as you're in a game, you're not thinking Messi has the ball and there's a 50-50. I can't possibly go in and tackle Messi. Like, I can't foul him or hurt him or upset his feelings. And I was kind of saying, like, yeah, like, if something's happening, you tell him, oh, fuck off, that wasn't a foul, something like that.
Mm.
And then, yeah, they printed, I told him to fuck off. And
well, these, you're right there, because...
If I had to, I would, but I don't think I did. I don't think I ever did.
Well, look, mate, listen, you know as well as I do, it's a competitive sport. So 50-50 is all right. 50-50 challenges these days, you see a lot of players ducking out of it, especially in the Premier League, but I'm not going to get into that one. But it's almost as if, you know, you're right, you can't be in awe of these players, because it's like what they say, you've won the game in the tunnel. When you got the likes of Messi and Suarez and all these other players, they're probably thinking, fuck, like, we ain't going to beat these guys. But, you know, you were quite unlucky against them, to be fair. Am I wrong?
The first game, I think it was just the best time to play them. We could have played them. It was Luis Enrique was the manager, and he had just been appointed manager. And Suarez had that ban. So he wasn't playing the first game, and they weren't really ticking like they were later on in that season. Because they beat us with a set piece. They beat us with a PK scored a header. We didn't really create much. I think Manduka might have had a chance near the end. Other than that, yeah, I think we could have come away like 0-0, a draw in the Nou Camp, which obviously would be an unbelievable result. But I think for later on in that group, we could have done the home game with Ajax, we should have won.
Mm.
I missed a header that I've regretted so much.
Was that stuck with you?
Yeah, it's one of the chances like that I always think about. Because if I score that, then I've scored in the Champions League. I know I've scored qualifying goals, but like a Champions League group stage goal is would be something to have.
Yeah, of course, for a team like Bordeaux against big names like that. But going back to the domestic side, then, so you know you're playing Champions League football against these teams. And then you're steamrolling the rest of the league. I think you beat Anorthosis 8-1 once, if I'm not mistaken. Back into the was it before the playoffs have started? Again, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So when you're playing Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain with Ibrahimovic, etc. And then you're playing domestically. Omonia this season, we've noticed a difference in terms of their performances. You know, playing Europa League football and then playing domestically. I'm not saying the players' heads weren't in it, but from a physical and just a physical standpoint, you could tell the difference. The demands are higher in Europe, whereas domestically, it's not the same. So results were kind of a bit iffy domestically. So when you guys were in the league, you were still steamrolling teams. Now, are we talking about the levels of the league in terms of ability have improved now? Or would you say that back then, you guys were just so good, it wasn't even a thing?
No, that season we were in the Champions League, there was a stage where I thought we wouldn't lose. I was like, I just felt so confident that we were winning, that we were going to win every game. And then I think we lost just before December, just before the breakup for that little Christmas breakup. I think we lost with Hermes at home or away, I'm not sure. And yeah, up until then, I thought this. No one was beating us. Just like sometimes you just have that confidence that the team's going to win. And I think we just had that. I think because we had a good squad as well, you knew that if you didn't play good after a European game, someone was going to come in and could take your place. And then you didn't want to lose your place and not play a Champions League game. And because the teams we had in that group, every game was like a prestigious game that you wanted to play against, like big stadiums, big teams. So that I remember kind of always having that in my head, that like if you get in the team, stay in the team. Doesn't matter who you're playing. Because I'm pretty sure our first game after we played in the Nou Camp, the next game we played away to Ayia Napa. And I remember thinking, like, from basically, like what I've just said, from the Nou Camp to playing Ayia Napa. And I just always was thinking at that time, like, don't give a reason not to play in the next Champions League game.
Understood, mate. Understood. Well, I've got one more question with regards to your time at Abuel, because obviously this is an Omonia show, so I don't want to be talking too much about that lot. But going back to what I mentioned about the quality. So, you know, you're in the tunnel before every game. You've got, as you mentioned, Manduka. You've got so many other players. Di Vicente was there, if I'm not mistaken. And then you're looking at your opponents and you're like, okay, right, we've got this one in the bag. Did you ever face any opponents that felt, right, we're going to get stuck into these guys? Kind of like you would expect in the UK, you know, a big club against a smaller club. Get stuck in, get right up them and see what they're made of.
No, I don't remember anything like that. The only time we might have been like that was in the qualifiers when we played the first one. We played Helsinki,
right,
and then Aalborg. So both Scandinavian teams, and I kind of remember thinking. The games that we played, because both second legs were in Cyprus. And kind of like the emphasis was put them under pressure, like not by pressing them and getting into them, like you were saying, like UK kind of mentality, but more with the ball, like always attacking, because you know those teams struggle with the heat.
Yeah.
In that time, so if you can like keep putting pressure on them for the first like 50-60 minutes, they're gonna get tired.
Brilliant. Okay, so I'm gonna hand you over to Roy in just a moment. You joined the Omonia in 2015. Again, speaking to a lot of Omonia fans, especially those on Instagram that have bombarded us with questions to ask you, which we'll do near the end. Obviously, there's this massive love for you from our supporters. Do you still feel that from? Did you have that from the Abuel fans? That kind of that love that obviously Omonia fans are showing you now. Because every Omonia fan I speak to, they're like, "Oh my god, we love this guy!" Like they put you up there, man.
Yeah, it was weird. Like I had it from. Everyone used to say when I moved clubs, like, how was it like from fans? But I think the way that I left, it was. I'm not Cypriot. I wasn't like saying no to one and to join another, or like telling one I don't want to be here. I'm going over there. And I think the way that worked out, I kind of felt I never really had any bad feelings from Apoel fans. Always like anytime I'd meet them out and about on the street, they'd talk nice to me. Even when we played them, they weren't too like. Obviously, like whistling a bit when I had the ball, but nothing, I don't remember anything like really bad being said to me. And then on the Omonia thing was, I always felt the support, and I kind of knew that they liked me, but I knew they liked me because I was playing good. If you're like, you have to be playing good for fans to like you, or you have to be doing something for them to like you. You can be a good person and be funny and all that, but if you're not playing good, then it's going to be that, like that, that's going to be a bad thing about you. That's going to be,
and they'll let you know.
Yeah, that's going to be you're joking too much, or you're not serious about that. So I'd echo what you said at the start. Like I have always felt the support from both of them.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate. Roy?
Yeah. Actually, I want you to remind us a little bit how you moved from Abuel. Because like we mentioned in the beginning, you know, you won the double twice. You scored some decisive goals for Abuel. And then what happened? How did you decide? Did you say, you know what, I like Cyprus and I want to stay here and Omonia is the club I want to play football? Do you have other offers to leave from Cyprus? What made you decide to go to Omonia? Obviously, what you said was true, because I think that you're probably the only person who played for both the clubs, and they really like you and they respect you. And, you know, I've seen tens of players playing both clubs, but with you, it was really different. But that obviously happened after you left. So you didn't really know that was going to happen before you decided. So that was another factor you have to bear in mind. So do you want to tell us a little bit on how did you decide to come to Omonia? Who approached you? What happened? A little bit like a story that we don't really know.
It was basically, so my contract at Apoel had finished, and they didn't want to renew or offer me a new one. So then I was a free agent. I didn't speak to any teams or anything before that, because it was kind of like until the very last, it might have been the day after the last game of the season, when I still really didn't know what was happening. And then I had a few clubs in Cyprus were interested, mostly the top like four or five teams outside Apoel, basically. and I spoke with Kaifas. And he basically on the phone, he was the most eager. Like I had the feeling that he really wanted me the most. Not to say that the other teams didn't like show me something like that, but I just felt that he was the most kind of insistent on it and would like phone me and say, look, I watch you really like you. I want you to come. Have a few days to think about it. And then he'd phone me back, see like, how are you thinking? What are you feeling? And basically that kind of feeling of he really wants me there to join. And then it was, I would have, if I wasn't just at Apoel, I probably would have been like, yeah, straight away. Because that previous season, I remember Ammonia playing really good and we struggled a few times against them. And then the only thing that was holding me back a bit was the fact going Apoel to Ammonia. And then that's probably what took it. I think it might have been a week or two in between from when I was a free agent to signing. It might have been 1 week or 2 weeks, I'm not sure. But yeah, that was basically it. It was just true speaking to him.
Mate, okay. did it help that Gaiafa was a club legend, and for him to be so enthusiastic about signing you, was that kind of like, wow, he's a rival club, but yeah, he's a club legend, head coach, and he wants me here. Was that the carrot on the stick, so to speak?
It helped. Like you'll always hear players say it when a lot of times the deciding factor can be you just felt that club wanted you the most. And then I think because I knew it was that, but also how good I remember Ammonia being that previous season. Because they finished quite high, no? I can't remember where they finished. But
I think your first season we finished fourth. Rob, was it 2014-15 season? Is it third?
Yeah, I think Killian's talking about...
It might have been close. It might have been close, like between second, third and fourth.
Yeah.
But I just remember from playing against them that I was like, that looks like a pretty good team to play in for a striker. And first season, it proved kind of to be right.
Yeah. So the first game you played, was it with Jagiellonia when you scored the goal? Was that your first game with Ammonia in Europe?
No. The first game was Batumi.
And then it was Jagiellonia.
Yeah. And the very first game we played away with Batumi. And I didn't even come on. We lost 1-0 and I didn't come on. And I remember thinking like, this is weird. But at the end, Pote was still there.
Yeah.
I think he played that game. And then the second game I came on and I might have set up the goal Schembri scored.
Yeah.
We missed a penalty that game. I didn't take it.
Yeah,
and that's how I got to take
it with Brodby.
That's how I got to take the next penalties we got because Goulon missed the penalty in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then my first proper game was with against Jagiellonia.
We beat them 1-0, wasn't it?
No.
Yeah, so we drew 0-0 in Poland and then in Cyprus we won 1-0.
Yeah, I remember that game. I was there.
And I scored. So
yep.
It helped. It helped. When you score early on, when you join a club, it's a massive, massive help.
Instant impact. That's what you need.
And they remembered that a year and a half later when they signed you, Jagiellonia, wasn't it? You know, because you scored against them. They probably that played the role for you to signed for them a year and a half later, wasn't it?
I think similar to the Paulo Sergio thing, I think it might have put me on the radar. I'm not entirely sure, but it's something I never actually asked. But I know, I remember at the time that coach at Jagiellonia, it was kind of done, I had the feeling it was done the kind of like that British way of, if a manager likes some players, the club signs the players the manager wants. It's not like a director's signing players that a manager doesn't really know about. So I think it was because I'd played against them.
Yeah, but bro, when you joined Omonia, I think we made about 9-10 signings that summer, and I think the same amount of players left. I remember Fofi left that summer, didn't he, Roy? Didn't Fofi leave that summer? End of August?
Yeah.
And Baudet left as well. But, you know, it must have been difficult, not just for you, but for the whole team, and Gaiafa especially, when you've got so many players coming in at the same time. And don't forget, we'd won the title like 5 years prior, and players like Leao was still there, and they'd left that summer. So it's almost as if it was like a massive transitional period. But it kind of continued to be a transitional period with the shit constantly hitting the fan.
Yeah, it's that's one of the things. When things aren't going good, it's so hard to change things around quickly, to get a quick impact of all so many changes. And I think I'd probably say that's what hurt us the next season, because the next season was an even bigger change when we had Dabizas in as a director, and like it was just a completely different structure. So there was, you had the turnover of all the players and the coaching, but also the other structure of the club changed as well. And it was hard, like a club at Omonia, it's hard to have a slow transition. Like fans expect the club to be winning, so it's hard to have a one or two seasons where you're going to have to say, look, things aren't going to be too good for these seasons. Like you can't say that, or you can't even start the season with those expectations. So it's like you're saying, with a turnover of players is always difficult.
But don't forget, I mean, when you were at Apoel, there was a much more structured dynamic at the club, wasn't there? And then you come to Omonia, where we know about the financial difficulties. We've spoken to many players, Fredji being one of them. We had Skembri on a few weeks ago, and he was telling us how difficult it was at the time at the club. And then Dabizas comes in with John Carver. Obviously, Miljovojevic had a bit of a short stint. But when you saw Dabizas come in and you saw, I presume you guys saw a few changes being made in the background and the structure of the club and the way that the mechanics, so to speak. Did you at any point, or the rest of your teammates, turn around and say, right, fuck, you know, things are changing now, we really need to step up? Or was this attitude pretty much the same? We just go out on the training pitch, give it our all, go back on the pitch, listen to the coach, do our job, and if the results come, they come.
No, I think it was just, there was so much trying to be changed. And it was hard to, like I was saying, it's hard to have all those changes and everything just to continue, not even just to continue as they were, like results wise the club is doing well, or not doing well, but like is in the top end of the table, is challenging, but to also make the changes obviously because you want to go better, it's hard to suddenly just change everything. A new approach, new ideas, and when players come in, and it was a weird start, because I remember we started that season okay, but because we weren't maybe playing such good football, or because we weren't beating teams like 3-0 or 3 or 4 goals every game, we were still beating, I think the first 6 or 7 games, we might have won 5 games or something, but kind of like scraping wins, but we were still winning. And because we were winning, there was still a bit of a bad atmosphere, like almost like a disappointment that it's still not good enough. And then it was hard when the results actually weren't going good. It just made everything like more magnified and more intense.
So what was it fans or the press where you felt the pressure more? Because I understand that a lot of fans are close to the players. You go to a coffee shop, they won't leave you alone. You know, you've got the press constantly hounding you. It's not like the UK where they're literally in your bins taking photographs. But I guess press conferences or when you're out and about, you're going to have people constantly slandering you. And obviously, you wouldn't know the language. But at the same time, you're obviously being told these things from your teammates. So I guess it must have upset the team morale, surely.
The press or the media didn't really bother me, or even the fans saying stuff, or the pressure from the fans didn't really bother me. It was probably just because there was so many different things coming in, and players that would be coming in that wouldn't be used to it. Because I was thinking, like, when I came into APOEL, or like into Cyprus straight away, and I remember thinking the first time, like, going through a bit of a bad patch, and that was at APOEL, whenever they just won the league, they've been in Europe, everything was still good for the club, and I still found this, like, oof, that was pretty tough. Like, so if you've got all that, plus you don't have all that behind the club of the success to kind of like cushion it a little bit, it just kept getting worse and worse. And for players that wouldn't have had that before, it would be, it's a big ask for players. And not just a few, because there were so many new players as well, it would have been difficult.
Did any struggle to get settled, do you think, family-wise? Because obviously you go out there, you were already out there, so to speak, but these guys that came from different nations, didn't speak the language, perhaps they didn't have any teammates that spoke the same language. Did you see any struggle?
No, there was nothing like... There was nothing in a training or the training ground where you'd feel like I was like bad, like there was a bad environment or anything. There was nothing like that. Like everything was, we'd go in, we'd try and be as positive as we could after a bad time. But it just kind of was growing and growing. And like one of the hardest things in football is to get confidence. When things aren't going good, or a team doesn't have confidence, isn't playing with confidence, it's the hardest thing, and it's the worst thing as well, because you know what it is. Like, you know, you're doing everything during the week. Everyone was training good. Trainings were good. We had good fitness coaches, good coaches, everything. But confidence, like if a team doesn't have confidence, it's not something you can train on. You can't train, like, you can train your finishing or fitness, but trying to get confidence, it just comes from winning and doing well. And we were just kind of always chasing that and just never getting it.
I think it's great that you're another player that's basically knocked something on the head here, because a lot of players that we've spoken to about Omonia during their time when the club was going through a difficult period financially, especially, they didn't let that bother them. It didn't play a part in their performances. They just remain professional. Again, you know, you're another one of the players that says, right, whatever happened in the background, there's nothing to do with us. Like, as long as, you know, we got paid and whatnot, that got sorted, then eventually you got paid eventually. But, you know, it didn't prevent you guys from playing the game. As you just said, it was about confidence. Results weren't coming. But when Carver came in, him from the UK, he claimed to be, at one time, I don't know if you know this, Roy, but John Carver once said that he was one of the best coaches in the UK. And that was a big thing to say, a big, big thing to say. And he came to Cyprus. I believe that he was on his way to Las Vegas before he got a phone call from Dabizas for him to come to Cyprus. What was he like from a tactical perspective? Because he did remarkably well in the background for Newcastle. Let's not make any bones about it. He did very well for him, very well for him. But it's a shame that he didn't get the opportunity to kind of do things his own way in Cyprus. Because I remember the last time we spoke on the podcast, Killian, I was saying, like, maybe he needs an opportunity. He definitely needs the opportunity to kick things on. And then fast forward I think it was 7-8 months, and that was it. He was only there for 7-8 months.
Yeah. He was. I had him when I was at Plymouth. He came in as the assistant coach. So I had him very briefly. But like training wise, coaching and the training, like he'd put on some of the best training sessions I've had. I mean, like we'd do finishing drills after training. He'd do them, and he's definitely more of a coach, I feel like, because not often after training, if you're doing extra drills, it's normally an assistant coach or another coach will take those stuff. The manager doesn't really do those extra drills after the training. And he'd always stay back. And the Yorgos Simos was the assistant.
Yeah. He was in Offi this year.
And the two of them would always stay back. So it was a bit like, it was strange for the manager to be doing that extra, but that's just, if you're a coach, you're a coach. You want the coach, like you want to put on sessions. And like I'd back up how good a coach he was, from the sessions he put on. But I just think he just came into a hard environment at the time. Like it was, like I was saying, like you can do everything on the training, but if the team just can't win, and you need wins, you need one win then to get on a little roll, and then you've got confidence back. But it was just hard to get. I just remember like games where I don't remember a game where we were up by a few goals and like enjoying it. You were just kind of always,
it was scraping victory.
Yeah, you were just thinking, just win the game. We just need to win this game.
Fair enough. Roy, I kind of hijacked your questions, mate. Sorry. Carry on.
Yeah, I was about to say that, you know, now I'm a bit confused because I was waiting for my time. But yeah, never mind. I mean, Killian answered some of the questions I had in mind. But I was going to ask, you played for both the teams, and I'd like you to compare the two clubs. Did you feel any differences between the two clubs? Obviously, you said that at the time, Arbroath was a bit more structured. They were winning titles. They were an up, but that's the club. What about the general atmosphere you felt with the fans mostly? Were any of the fans different to you, or did all of them seem the same to you? The way they approached you, the pressure you might have felt, the love you might have felt, the support and all of that? Because obviously, even though we're talking about the two biggest clubs in Cyprus, it was at a time where, you know, Arbroath was at its peak and Omonia was struggling, mostly financially, but then otherwise as well because of the financial problems. But how did you receive all that as a player, and the comparison between the two, but not as far as the club, but mostly, like I said, the fans and all of that?
It's probably kind of a boring answer, but I'd say I kind of felt the same from both of them. I never felt like they're better than them, or like a big difference in that way, or their like mannerisms. Also, it's like I would have obviously loved to gone to Omonia and won something with them, or won a league, or won a cup or something with them. And then you've got all the fans that I knew was there, but you've got them when you're winning. Like it would have made it a huge difference, I'm sure. Like it would have made it even better. There was nothing bad in terms of that. But if it was winning, and I had, like, you could experience all those fans,
yeah,
in a winning environment and a winning team, it would have been a different obviously it would have been different. And then the other way, if I was at Apoel and we weren't doing well, it's probably going to be a different experience as well. So it's probably like kind of almost the tables have turned now, yeah, where Ammonia is on top and doing well and Apoel are struggling. So it's...
Never mind. yeah, so, okay, the other question I wanted to ask, which again, sort of answered, how was the dressing room like? I mean, we mentioned in the introduction that you're one of the funniest guys and you were fun, and we spoke to quite a few players that mentioned, especially Skembri, he mentioned you, that you went to his wedding as well in Malta, and they were really fun. Okay, but you were a professional, you were a good player, so let's not make a mistake about that, you know. But do you remember stories like back in the day in the dressing room, or because of the atmosphere and the pressure, you felt you weren't really having those laughs in the dressing room? Do you remember any stories like funny stories that you want to share with us at Simon Ammonia, or like there's something that stood out? Or
put me on the spot here.
You're thinking about ones you can repeat, aren't you? I've heard stories from footballers.
Yeah, so the first season when I went in, from like from the first minute, you'd know Skembri is Skembri. Like, he's going around talking to everyone, introducing, real friendly, really nice guy. And then it was a shame he wasn't there for the second season.
Yes.
And then the second season, when Matt came, Derbyshire, it was the first time I'd had someone from the UK. So like, I would have had, it would be I'd have totally different humour with Matt than I would with the other guys. Like, my humour with Matt would be more dry and compared to how I would be with the other guys. Stories. I need to think of a story. From those seasons.
I'll tell you what, let me help you out here, yeah? Because a certain gentleman that you just mentioned messaged me to say, Matt said you couldn't down a certain drink at his house one time.
I don't know. No. There's no proof, so...
Well, he sent me a sick emoji afterwards, so
there's no picture, there's no video of
anything. Didn't happen, yeah. Fake news, yeah.
So allegedly.
Have you got anything about Matt so I could throw it back at him? Ball's in your court now, man.
Something will come to me. Something will come to me. Let me think of something.
Shall we move on and let you give you the chance to think about it?
Yeah, move on and I'll come to one. I don't want to waste time.
All right, you got any more questions, mate?
Yeah, basically, we're getting closer to the quick fire questions, which is going to be questions from fans that they asked us to ask you. But before we go there, do you want to tell us a little bit more about? Okay, I asked you for a funny story, and you said you're going to remember one. So for you to try real hard, mustn't have had so many fun stories. But anything else, like from your time in Cyprus or Ammonia, that you know you haven't shared this far, and you'd like to share it with us now, or like something you'd like to say? Okay, obviously, if you don't want to, you don't have to, but like anything else, like from your time here in Cyprus?
I can't think of any
those questions are easier.
I can't think of any funny stories.
The thing is, yeah, like we could go to Cyprus, like from the UK, we go to Cyprus, we go to Napa, we go to all these different clubs, and we come back with all these stories about getting pissed and ended up in swimming pools and shit. But you guys are professional footballers, so those kind of stories, I wouldn't expect like a kind of Stan Collymore story where you're setting off fire extinguishers in hotels or players falling out of windows and shit. You guys had to maintain that professionalism. But the thing is, in Cyprus, everything is they find your sense of humor amazing because they're not used to it. I think that, is that not right, Roy? You know, when I do my Instagram videos, I get so many people from Cyprus messaging me like about how funny I am. I'm like, well, that's just how we are in the UK. But I think because that sense of humor kind of gets lost on the aeroplane between the UK and Cyprus. Yeah. It's almost as if like they're expecting a brand new story left, right and centre. But, listen, winning the title in Arbor, you must have had some parties here and there, you know? That's what I assume anyway.
When the first year when we won that league, so obviously it was after the IL game. Mm. And I'd scored the goal. And everyone was obviously going back to... Because the season had been extended, I had to delay my holiday. And whatever, 2 or 3 days. So I was due to go to Portugal like 2 days previous or 1 day previous. So I went from the from Anortis's stadium. I went direct to the airport. I didn't go back to Nicosia to celebrate or anything.
So you had your suitcase packed and all that and went to Larnaca Airport.
Well, I was getting videos of people on the highway, on the bridges, and getting videos from the guys from like Antoniadis and who else would have been? Christofidis would have been sending me pictures of or videos like when they were out with fans singing my name. And I didn't get anything till like the next morning because I was traveling. And I was going, so I went straight to holiday in Portugal the next day, yeah.
And you missed out all the celebrations.
I missed all the celebrations. And then the second season, it was pretty low key. There wasn't much.
What about the goal celebration against Addis where you celebrated in front of no fans for Monia?
Yeah, cheap laughs, that one, wasn't that?
Yeah, that was hilarious, man.
Looking back at that, was better.
That was more like a Soccer AM kind of moment, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm really letting you down here.
No, man. It's like, because you know what's going to happen? You're going to come off and you'll be like, oh, man, I remember this. I completely forgot to tell these guys. You know, that's fine. Listen, I'm sure we'll do this again sometime. But I've got some names. I'll tell you what, I'm going to try something different, yeah? I'm going to give you 4 names, right? And yeah. I want you to just give me a breakdown of how you would explain or describe them to an alien, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah? All right. Nuno Assis.
Oof. Nuno Assis. To an alien, how would I describe him?
Or just anyone that doesn't know who this footballer is. How would you explain them? Explain what they're like in terms of their ability and all that.
I'd say if you want to make a good impression, good first impression, offer him a cigarette.
There you go.
Obviously, see, that should be the ad for cigarette companies trying to.
This is just lighting one up, yeah.
Trying to sell cigarettes, like, look, I don't think they're that bad for you. Look at the shape he's in. he would have been 36 that season, 36 yeah. or 37, and he was so good. Like to for a striker to play with him, it was so good. But. Yeah, was
we're talking about movement here, or just vision, technique,
bit of everything. He might be going around the game easy, and then the team might need something, and he'll go take the ball, make a little 1-2 with someone from deep, attacking, maybe put me in, or you'll have a shot on goal, and we'll lift the crowd as well.
Mm.
Enjoy the cigarette.
Here's one which the name is kind of forbidden. Sorry, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Margasa.
Margasa was just training like million miles an hour training. I think that's why, like, he was captain, so would want to be the more. He wasn't the typical Portuguese player. He'd be more. Mm. Still was deep, was had decent technique, but not what you'd think of when you're thinking of a Portuguese player.
Didn't have any brown envelopes in his locker, did he?
Loved a little
comb. Oh, Soul glow, like it's coming to America.
Yeah, shocking.
All right, Clayton.
Clayton was. He was a striker's dream because his passing and his vision was so good. His, like, as a number 10, he was, for a striker, he was perfect. And the other thing I loved about him, he'd take the ball anytime. If there was a guy on him, if he's coming like and showing to a midfielder or a defender, and there's a player from the other team like man marking him, He wouldn't care. If he didn't get the ball and the defender or whatever says, "Oh no, you had someone on you," he'd be like, "Don't care. Give me the ball. I'll keep it. I'll not lose it." He liked. He liked life. Huh?
Good dancer, then. Yeah, good dancer. A lot of barbecue.
Good dancer. Good barbecue. Good player. Good guy.
There you go. Lovely. All right, one more name. Matt Derbyshire.
Matt Derbyshire. I'm still waiting on Matt's. I'm still waiting on his fashion line to his clothing line to be released.
Wait, hang about. So is this the one that you went to Australia for to flog?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe Is that one of the reasons?
Well, I don't know. I'm asking you. I mean, you know him. You've known him longer than I have.
I just know when I first came over, there was a fashion line clothing in the making. And
okay.
I've never seen any finished product or.
Maybe
not even offered any to promote if they were.
The brains behind Giacomo. You don't know.
Definitely not him.
Maybe you should send him an email like you did with Nike.
Send them a tweet, yeah.
Like you did with Nike.
Yeah. Me and my friends, we were joking about that the other day. It came up anyway, but I sent it from.
Brilliant. Yeah. Right, I've got some quick fire questions from the Instagram page, and I'm gonna love you. I'm gonna let you. I love you and leave you, or leave you be, as being the right term, eh?
I've already given Shkembri a shout out, haven't I?
Yes. I was gonna ask him being one of the names, but you've mentioned him. But you can talk about him again if you want. I don't mind.
No. Okay, we can continue. I don't want to give him too much. Okay. I know he gave me quite a good reference on it. So.
Okay. Was his wedding good though? Was his wedding as you expected?
His wedding was unbelievable. His wedding was unbelievable.
Was it like Posh and Bex though?
Biggest wedding I've ever been to, I think. Everyone in Malta was there.
You haven't been to weddings in Cyprus then? Like
Posh and Bex, huh?
Yeah. All right. I like that. Like it. All right. I've got some quick questions. I've got Grigori asking your national team initiation song. What did you do?
My national team initiation song, I done a remix of iPhone 65 Blue.
Get out of here.
Except when it kicked in, I went, so it goes and you ain't got nobody to listen. And then I done a little scratch, little turntable scratch, and it went, remix. I'm new. Da-ba-dee-da-ba-da.
Oh, mate. That's
that got me.
Good.
That got me 3 caps.
Yeah,
I'm convinced. But that initiation song won over Trapattoni.
So yeah, so what blew it though? Was it the voicemail message that you had that completely threw him, the old man?
Nah, I think I was out before then.
Oh, I'll give you that. All right, okay. Someone asked, Andrea asked, how did it feel scoring the win against Jagiellonia? I don't think we really discussed that one, but yeah, how did it feel scoring against the team that you ended up joining?
Obviously, at the time, I didn't know that, but it felt so good because it was my first goal. Because I'd scored, you always just want to get your first goal done and kind of out of the way because you don't want to keep going. And then it's all that hangs over your head. Like, fuck, I still haven't scored here. I need to score here. So that was like the best thing about it was that I'd scored. And then obviously after, like, we win and we qualify. But personally at the time, it's like, okay, that's that done.
Brilliant. Okay, one more question from Michael, massive fan of yours. He says, what did you like most, or what do you like most about Omonia fans? Right on the fence there.
What do I like most about Omonia fans? Just passionate fans. Passionate fans, you see it's... I know I've said about the pressures on the team and not having that confidence, but it's definitely better to be playing with pressure than without. It definitely, it can give you something that, for whatever reason, something's not happening on the day, or you're not feeling, you're just not 100%. But if you know that pressure that you need to win here, then gives you a little bit more to dig in for. So it's like I was saying, it can be a lot when the team's not doing good, but once the team kind of gets a bit of momentum, then having that, it keeps it there.
But they came to stop training, didn't they? I remember you messaging me a long time ago. You're like, yeah, they came to a training ground today, and we had to cancel training because they turned up in their droves.
Yeah, but like that happened a few times. So at that stage, it wasn't. From my experience, it happened a few times. It happened maybe once that well. I don't know if the training was cancelled or they stopped the training, but look, it's their way to let you know that this is what's expected, and this is what we want, and that's what I was saying about the if there's players that it hasn't happened to before, then that's quite a big shock to your, like, you majority of people wouldn't have had that in their careers, and then for it to happen like that, it would be quite a shock to them.
Absolutely. Well, Roy, you've got a question, haven't you? You showed me earlier.
Yeah, explain this, Killian, please. Can you explain this?
It's just a really good portrait. Good. Kind of hypnotizes people, so don't stare at it too long. No, it was I was in Glasgow, and it was a Sunday morning. I think we were out Saturday night or something, and it was Sunday morning. Got up, had a shower, washed my hair dryer, and then I didn't realize that I'd used volumizing shampoo, so that's why it's just went
right like
fucking mushroom. And it was just iconic. Yeah. I've heard
absolutely.
I've heard.
And the red jumper. Come on now, I've seen the red jumper.
The red jumper was just for a laugh, really. One of the
this
guys
iconic like, moments, man. This is what you're saying.
The guys was like, why don't you wear that? I'd never thought about it. So I was like, okay.
Brilliant.
You became a vegan. Again, why? Why did you become a vegan? Was it Florescu that turned you into a vegan? when you were at Omonia, was it around that time when you chose to become a vegan? Because I think Florescu is, and he's got like a restaurant or something like that now, and he cooks.
That's,
was it at the same time?
That's what Chef Taya done to me. I loved meat, and then started getting shoveled with Chef Taya every day, and I thought, fuck that, I'm out. No, I just said I'd try it one day, and then felt the difference, felt really good, kept doing it, and then pulled in Gio Florescu, got him into my cult.
Oh, look at that.
No, sorry. He didn't, I don't think he even knew I was vegan. It was just coincidence that he started doing it close enough to the time after I did as well.
Okay.
Roy's just baffled. He's a Cypriot. What the fuck is this veganism?
Yeah, I'm half an Arab as well, so yeah. Makes it worse. So, yeah. So, do you still keep in touch with guys from like Cyprus? You've still got mates here in Cyprus, or like, okay.
Talk to a few. I talked to Matt. Matt, I'm in contact with a bit. Who else? From Apoel, Antoniades, I speak a bit. Andreas Christofidis, he was there at the time. I talked to him a bit. From Ammonia, Economides, Yorgos.
Yeah.
I was good friends with him at the time. Schembri, I was talking to after I was talking to him on through Instagram after I saw that clip. Don't want to miss anyone out. I think that's it. Is there any other guys?
You're going to get someone messaging you afterwards saying, why didn't you mention me?
Hey, fuck them.
Beautiful.
Okay. I've got a few more questions if you've got something. The nickname, the Sheriff, is it because of the hair and the hat?
No, the Sheriff came before the hair.
No, before the long hair.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So how did that come up? Who thought of that?
So we're on holiday in America when I was younger with my friends. And basically the next day I've woken up with an actual sheriff's badge, a full-on real sheriff's badge, and the brown hat to wear.
Yeah.
And then just was going around with that for like the rest of the holiday. So if anything was happening, I was just whipping out the thing. I was like, sheriff.
I was half expecting you to say then a horse kind of walked out of your bathroom.
Yeah, so I was like for about 3 or 4 days in America, I was a legitimate sheriff.
Can you get arrested for that out there?
Not if I'm the sheriff.
Yep.
No, one of my friends just called me sheriff one day from Sheridan, Sherry. So he just, the first four letters of Sheridan. Yeah. It was the first time anyone had ever said it to me. And he just said one day, he was like, all right, sheriff. I like it.
You're going to resume the podcast though?
Nah. Nah, retired.
Well, that's a shame. Well, good man.
You can be on the podcast.
Too many now.
Yeah.
Too many. Too many players doing them now. That's.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. True. True. I like the.
Don't hate the player. Hate the game.
There's quite a lot of decent ones, to be fair.
I still listen to them and watch them, but I don't know. I stopped it, and then
Well, they kept me entertained at least anyway. So, you know, you got a fan.
Appreciate it.
One ain't bad. One ain't bad. It's one more than what we got.
Yeah, brick by brick.
That's it. Rome wasn't built in a day. That's it. Very good. Roy, any more?
Yeah.
Want
to come back now, to Fred, Cyprus and play football? Would you consider coming back to Cyprus to play football? Would you consider that if you got an offer this summer, let's say? Cyprus, you want to come back to?
He's been around the world. He's coming back.
Yeah, no, I loved my time there. It was all the time I've been asked, like, where's the best place I've lived? Almost enjoyed, and I've always said Cyprus. It was where I probably played some of my best football. Really enjoyed my time, like the people, like the island. You never know.
Okay, one last question from me. Obviously, do you still get informed? Do you still watch what's going on? Obviously, you know that now Omonia is on top of the league. Do you actually follow what's going on here? Have you got an idea of what's going on generally? What do you think of the title race this far? Do you think?
I'll follow results and stuff like that. I've took a bit more of an interest when Mick McCarthy got the APOEL job. And now they've got Jack Byrne. I've kind of watched it a bit more then. Not watching games, but like looking at results and watching the table. And then I'll check in on the table and see how it's going. I kind of do that with everywhere I've been. Any like past clubs or leagues, I'll keep an eye on how things are going.
Do you speak to Jack Byrne by any chance? Do you know him, or do you know anyone that knows him?
I didn't know him. I'd never spoke to him, but I was speaking to him after he joined. I think it was just after Mick McCarthy left.
Yeah, because I know he had a big season at Shamrock Rovers, wasn't it? And
yeah.
He left and. They put him on such a pedestal, and they're saying, right, you know, why is he going to Cyprus? Why is he going to that league? And to be fair on that, I know he's had injuries, but he struggled to get into the first team. So I think that just shows how competitive the Cypriot league is, irrespective of Arbroyo's position.
Yeah. I know he did say that he just get back surgery, or he had a backup? He had something anyway.
He did have problems with his back. Yeah, I don't know if he had the surgery though, so I'd be lying if I said I knew.
I remember him saying that he had something, and then I saw he got surgery or he had an operation or something. So, but that annoyed me when he went there and everyone was like, what's he doing going to Cyprus? It's why, and the first thing they all say, why doesn't he go over and test himself in England again? And obviously, like he's done that. He's been there. It's just that attitude towards anywhere outside of the UK or anywhere outside the main four or five leagues in Europe. And it's there is no football. Football doesn't exist outside of those leagues.
Snobbery. Football snobbery.
I'm going to say that because. That's where my career has been outside those leagues. So.
No, but it's fact though, because if you look at, you know, the Cypriot league at this moment in time, all right, fair enough, it's not high quality like, you know, the Bundesliga or the Premier League, but I think it goes to show how well the Cypriot league is improving when you see the likes of Loizou Almonia, like Johnny's, like all these other players who've been called up to the Cypriot national team are actually being scouted by teams in England, by teams in Germany. I mean, Benfica are apparently after Loizou, which is remarkable.
Who's that?
One of our players, one of our teenagers.
Ah, yeah?
17-year-old youngster who plays for Omonia. He's been amazing. So he's got eyes over a lot of clubs.
Monaco, Benfica and Olympiacos.
Benfica.
So.
Nice.
Yeah, so, yeah.
There you go. Go ahead. Killian,
that'd be good. That'd be huge for Cyprus, for Cypriot football, if that started to happen more, right?
100%. I think the only player we got abroad is we got Castanos, isn't it? That's
You've got Laifis.
Laifis at Standard Liège.
Belgium. Yeah, you've got Gyarados who plays in Bulgaria now. I mean,
he went to Copenhagen, didn't he?
He went to Astana, and now he's in Ludogorets. There are quite a few. There's good talent, man. There's good talent. I believe there's talent in Cyprus. It's just that they never go to. It's difficult for them to go to the next level. I mean, up until a certain age, they're really good. But then you have to decide, because in Cyprus,
it's a total different lifestyle.
Yeah. And the lifestyle and the options, you know. In Cyprus, if you decide you want to go pro and become a football player, then you got to see your future. So some people, you know, they might have the talent up until a certain age, but then they say, you know what, I'm going to go study because I need to have a job and get the money. So, and they got the army as well, don't forget. All that as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's another factor to bear in mind. But, yeah.
There we go. Well, Killian, mate, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. We've gone on for close to an hour and a half, man. And I know you've got a lot to do this evening. You're an hour ahead of us and Roy's... Sorry, you're an hour ahead of me and Roy's an hour ahead of you.
I need to think of stories. That's the rest of my... The rest of my evening will be me sitting here thinking, why didn't I say that
one? You could WhatsApp me a video and I'll put it in the... put it like a... moments later at the end of the show.
Yeah, I might just make up one instead.
Well, mate, before I let you go, can you do us one last favor? It's not a piss take or anything. Can you do like a little, Roy, like an introduction, say you're watching the No Choftes podcast with Stel and Roy on the OLB. That's it.
What does it mean, no Choftes?
No nonsense.
Ah,
Choftes is like a village word that they use, you know. But you know, the Greeks don't use that, but the Cypriots, we do.
No Malakias.
Yeah. See, I couldn't call it the No Malakias podcast because we wouldn't get any airtime on the radio, you know.
Malakias is a bit of a swear word.
Yes, it is.
Well, Malagas is a wanker, so Malakia is the act. It's basically wanker.
I thought it was like kind of a softer.
I mean, literally that's what it means, but you use it between mates. But it loses its power when you use it so much. But the actual meaning is...
Malagia is nonsense, yes, but you can use it in more like an aggressive term as well.
it's not a corporate word, huh?
No. I think we can get away with. We can get away with Choftes, really.
I think this is how we should start the podcast. This last bit about Malakias. Interview with Killian Sheridan.
You can say, welcome to the No Malakias podcast.
it would be great if you could just say, hi, I'm Killian Sheridan.
I'll give you a good story.
Great. Nice.
And it's a little bit of both. It's a little bit Apoel and ammonia.
All right. Okay.
So when I first went to Cyprus, to Apoel, I didn't know really anything about Cypriot football or football in Cyprus, as I've said. And so I didn't know like about Apoel and ammonia or this. And the first, when I'd signed, I was wearing this green designed t-shirt. It had a green paisley patterned t-shirt.
Okay.
So I went into the office, signed the contracts, have the jersey with the president and all that in the office with this green t-shirt on. And no idea what I was doing or what I was doing wrong. And then later on, when they've put up, if you can see my picture they use for when I signed, they've photoshopped me onto a short sleeve black shirt, like like terrible. And I remember all the time thinking, what the fuck? Like, why have they done this? Is it because I was wearing a t-shirt or I had to wear a shirt or something? Like I couldn't figure out until months later, maybe even a year later, it just hit me one day and I was like, it's because I wore that. I was obviously wearing a green t-shirt. And another day in the dressing room, I had a Boston Celtics basketball shorts when I first came. And I was walking around the place like with these shorts on. And Mario Sergio, the Portuguese player that was at Apoel, one day goes to me, "What are you doing? You crazy? You stupid? Can't be wearing these." And this must have been like 2 or 3 weeks in, and I was walking around everywhere with them.
Oh mate,
you should have gone with the Celtic t-shirt as well, man, which has the shamrock as well.
Yeah, well, the Boston Celtics one has a big shamrock on the front, but yeah, it was a.
I remember when Mick McCarthy got the Abel job and they announced it on Twitter, and I looked at the timeline and all the replies were people from Ireland, Irish supporters with "well done Mick," and then they put the three leaf clover. I'm like, don't know what you're doing.
Yeah,
there you go, lost in translation, not knowing the culture. But hey, again, Killian, thank you very much for your time, man. Appreciate it. That was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, man, thank you so much, Killian.
No. Enjoy it. Just wish I could have told some fucking stories.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, what said? Huh? Say? What'd you say?
Some stories that I can say.
We still going to edit this and then upload it. So if you think of anything, just record yourself and send it to Stel and we can put it on.
Roy, wrap it up, Philemon.
Okay. Πάμε στην Nakamu, Omonia, Laos, Πρωτάθλημα, Killian.
I thought of something funny. Thought of a relatively funny story for you. Ammonia, all ammonia related. And it's with someone who I didn't mention as well, Marine Ursulich, whom I'm quite still friendly with. And back then was good friends with him. We had a maybe international break. And we decided we'd go to Athens for the 2 days. The two of us were there on our own, so we said, right, we'll go to Athens for the 2 days or 3 days, whatever it was. And when we were talking about it, the Aris Soliadis, the left back who was the Greek guy who was there, heard us talking about it, and he was also going back to Greece, back to Athens. So he's like, yeah, come back, we'll all get in the same flight and I can take you to stay in mine for the weekend, whatever. My car will be there at the airport, can take you in, no problem, you don't have to get taxis. So we're like, okay, yeah, pretty sound, let's do that. So we arrive at Athens airport. His car, now there's Soliadis who's obviously driving because it's his car, and then me and Marin, who were probably the two tallest players in the team. And he arrives with his car, it was in the airport car park, a smart car. So there was him driving and me and Marion had to figure out how the two of us could sit in the front seat of a smart car. And anyway, we managed to do it, and we're fucking having to drive around Athens when we were going like to for food and stuff in a smart car. And even better, later on in the day, me and Marin were like, "Aris, we can't continue like this. We need to maybe rent a new car or something." So Aris was speaking with Clayton, and Clayton left his car in Greece the whole time. He didn't bring it. He had an R8, Audi, whatever you say, R8. And Clayton was like, "Yeah, just take mine if you want. It's no one's using it." So we didn't know this was Clayton's car. And Aris was saying to us, "Okay, I spoke with Clayton. He said we can have his car." So we're like, oh, brilliant, brilliant. We need a bigger car. So anyway, picks up the R8. It's a two-seater again. And probably less space. So, hopefully that's a little bit of a funny story. And also, I should have given a shout-out to Ruchias, who was at Ammonia. I was friendly with him and talked to him every now and again. And I saw he's having a good season this year back in the national team, so good to see.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.